the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to talk today about deliberate childlessness. We're going to revisit the issue once again. Last night, I was on Anderson Cooper 360 and 360 Degrees. That's on CNN. And an interesting debate we had last night on national television about this whole issue of chosen childlessness. And we're going to let you in on what happened last night, or as I am going to tell you, what didn't happen. And that is much of a debate. And then we're going to look at this issue, and we're going to look at the arguments that have been really raised about the point I've been trying to make about the fact that married couples should be expected to have children, and that there's just something wrong with the conception of marriage, no pun intended, in which the married couple says, it's just about us, we're not going to have kids, we don't want the imposition of kids in our lives. I'm going to read you some of the stuff I've had in the mail, and I'm going to ask you to join the discussion. And folks, we're going to keep one line open today. For those of you who want to argue against me, the phone number, 877-893-8255, that's 877-893-TALK. If you want to argue that I'm completely out to lunch on this, you're going to have a free line to call, reserved for those who want to make your case. But you better be ready to make the case, because I'm going to press you on it. And we are going to have a discussion about this. First, a review of issues in the news. Of course, the whole issue of embryonic stem cell research has been in the news, and deservedly so. And what has happened just in the last 72 hours ought to be a wake-up call for all people who care about human dignity, or for that matter, even for those who just care about the integrity of experimental science. Now, in recent months, research done in South Korea has been grabbing the headlines. The research has been done by Dr. Hwang Woo-suk, who is a hero in the country of South Korea, because he supposedly, along with his colleagues in his laboratory in Seoul, had cloned the first human embryos, the first successful human clones. And, of course, this went on in terms of all the braggadocio. It was published in the magazine, the journal Science. Folks, it doesn't get much bigger than that in terms of a scientific discovery. That is a peer-reviewed journal, 25 co-authors, including some of the most well-established scientists around the world. But instantly, Dr. Hwang Woo-suk became a great hero to his people. They were actually planning a stamp with his picture on it in South Korea. And now it turns out it was fraud. Now, suspicions have been coming for weeks, and just over the last several days, it was discovered that the source of some of the eggs used in this research, some of the human eggs, had come actually from his own employees. That violates everything about science. These weren't anonymous donated eggs. They were eggs secured from people he knew. And then it turns out that the particular genetic profile that was provided in this research shows that these really weren't cloned. As a matter of fact, it looks like the whole thing now was one great fraud. And this is huge egg on the face of the entire scientific community. And, for instance, you have people saying immediately that this calls into question whether human beings can be cloned. Of course, I would say the prior question is whether they should be, and we've talked about that. This whole question of embryonic stem cell research comes down to a worldview clash in which there are some who are absolutely determined to say we must destroy human embryos in order to obtain these embryonic stem cells, and we must clone human embryos in order to have the embryos from which we can derive these stem cells. And, of course, the most promising research that has yet been done using stem cells has to do with adult stem cells that aren't morally compromised. You don't have to kill an embryo to get them. Now, I can just hope that this is a wake-up call. Gina Collada, writing in the New York Times, quotes Lori Zoloth, director of the Center for Bioethics, Science, and Society at Northwestern University, referring to Dr. Hwang's research, saying this is a tragic turn. Dr. Zoloth went on to say, we must believe that what they are showing us, that is researchers, and what they say has been demonstrated is worthy of our concern and attention. We depend entirely upon the truthfulness of the scientific community. Dr. Nigel Cameron, who is president of the Institute on Biotechnology and the Human Future at the Illinois Institute of Technology, said, certainly if these reports are true, it's a tragedy for science. Well, they're at least true to this point. Dr. Hwang's co-author has asked that his name be removed from the article and criminal investigation. A process of criminal investigation is now underway in South Korea. Dr. Hwang himself has admitted himself to a hospital and is not available for comment. We'll be watching this closely because, you know, once again, the overreaching of modern experimental science, and sometimes it's not the scientists doing this. Sometimes it's people in the media and in the cultural elites and in the society at large. A report comes out and they say, look, this is reality. We are absolutely convinced that what science proves is just absolutely right. Every other form of knowledge, every other means of knowledge has to take a backseat to science. And if it's published in a major peer-reviewed scientific journal, it just is. Well, except when it isn't. And it looks like that's what's going on here. This was fraud. But in the United States, this has had a political impact as people have been saying, look, the United States needs to loosen its restrictions upon embryonic stem cell research or we're going to fall behind. As if that's the real point anyway. Do we want to fall behind those who are sacrificing human dignity for technology? Yes, I want to be far behind that. But now we know that these claims weren't even true in the first place. In the Netherlands, of course, you have the Groningen protocols now for the euthanizing of infants and children. You have the slippery slope of what has been called assisted suicide and death with dignity and euthanasia. Now reports indicate that the Dutch Medical Association is laying down guidance on doctors' use of sedation to induce a coma in dying patients. Supposedly, this is being done in order to relieve the patient's pain and suffering. However, other doctors are saying, look, this is just a way of getting around their already liberal euthanasia guidelines. Because here's the way it works. Doctors just administer larger and larger doses of morphine as a pain reliever until the person eventually dies, because morphine also shuts down the entire nervous system, and eventually, no breathing, no life. Research indicates that what is called the, quote, terminal sedation, end quote, practice occurs in up to 14,000 deaths in the Netherlands each year. That's 10% of the total. Did you hear me there? 10%, that's 1 out of 10. Now, what happens when a society embraces death like this, and in the name of the good death, as they would label it, with euthanasia? You know, what we see in the Netherlands is that the rules never stay. You know, they say we're going to do it for the aged and the terminally ill. Oh, well, we'll also do it for younger people who are in great pain. And now we'll do it for teenagers who will recognize, even though they're not old enough to even vote, they're going to be old enough to vote to die. And then we're going to do it even for infants. And the Groningen Protocol allows doctors to euthanize infants without even telling the parents that's what they have done. Now terminal sedation. You can only fear what comes next. Charles Krauthammer is worried about what's coming out of Iran. President Ahmadinejad there has been ranting against Israel, denying the Holocaust, saying Israel should be wiped off the map and or relocated to Alaska and Canada. Now Krauthammer says it gets worse. The president of a country about to go nuclear is a confirmed believer in the coming apocalypse. He is a Shiite, and Shiite Islam has its own version of a messianic return, in this case the reappearance of the 12th Imam. The more devout believers in Iran pray at the Jamkaran Mosque, which houses a well from which some believe he will emerge. President Ahmadinejad unexpectedly won the presidential election, and he immediately gave 17 million of government funds to the shrine. President Ahmadinejad said publicly that the main mission of the Islamic Revolution is to pave the way for the reappearance of the 12th Imam. So is that what's going on here? Do we actually have the president of Iran thinking that he's going to prompt war with Israel that will lead to the appearance of the 12th Imam of Shiite Islam? Well, that's scary enough to send you into the weekend with a prayer. Brokeback Mountain appeared on the screens in three cities last Friday. But you would think it has become a runaway bestseller at the box office, which, of course, it has not. You can't see it most of the country. I can't see it in this city, if I wanted to, which I don't. And people are basically having to go to either Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York to see it. Or you can just wait for about, 2 minutes on any cable news broadcast and wait for them to talk about it, being nominated for 7 Golden Globes and a shoe-in for the Oscars and all the rest. Obviously, there is much more going on here than cinematography. Now New York Magazine comes out with its review, and it says this: you either buy into this tale of men in love, or you join the ranks of those who have been snickering during the movie's pre-release trailers, and who can be divided into the insecure, the idiots, or the insecure idiots. Now, why that's worth our commentary is this. Here you have New York Magazine. It's kind of the flagship magazine of the cultural elite in Manhattan, and they're talking about the rest of us in flyover country, which is everything between San Francisco and New York. And this is where the cultural elite is willing to fly over the rest of the country where the poor, unenlightened people live who don't think that a homosexual romance is to be celebrated on par with a heterosexual romance, of all things. And so we're told here that if you don't buy into this relationship, you fit into one of three categories. Listen to them. The insecure, the idiots, or the insecure idiots. In other words, we just don't even deserve a voice in this. If you're not buying into Brokeback Mountain, if you're not celebrating a gay cowboy romance, if you're not excited about this film with its depiction of, well, the dissolution of families and all the heartbreak and all the rest as these two cowboys are determined to fulfill their relationship even at the expense of their marriages and their children. If you don't buy into that, then you're insecure, an idiot, or an insecure idiot. Well, it's sometimes good to know what the cultural elite thinks of us. And what we need to do is think like Christians. We'll be back to talk about chosen childlessness as a lifestyle, coast to coast. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back, folks. Well, you know, I thought it was a good idea at the time. Frankly, in retrospect, I still do. I wrote an article a couple of years ago on a phenomenon that has been developing across the country. I wrote it especially as a Christian to my fellow Christians. And so my target audience was believers in Christ, because I was really trying to speak to those who ought at least to have some commitment to a Christian worldview, and then we can talk about these things within those parameters. And what alarmed me is that I kept hearing about more and more couples getting married and saying, we don't intend to have kids. Which, as I say, is a way of saying we want the intimacy and even the physical relationship of marriage. We just don't want the responsibility of kids. Now, let's just bracket some questions right up front. Number one, we're not talking about people who are having trouble with fertility. We're not talking about people who want children but haven't been able to have them. That's a completely separate issue, and we need to respond to those persons with prayer and sympathy and encouragement. Theirs is a noble hope. And we can only pray that the Lord will give them the desire of their hearts. We're not talking about older people who get married, okay? I'm not suggesting that there's a principle of procreation for people who get married in advanced years. That's not what we're talking about here. That's not the demographic movement that's of cultural concern either. What's catching the attention of the country are young people getting married and choosing childlessness. And it's not just anecdotal evidence here and there. It's not just individuals here and there. We're talking about people who have been doing this and, frankly, are doing it with abandon and are doing it organizing themselves together into clubs, groups like Baby Not On Board and other things. I'm going to tell you, the way that parenthood is addressed, for instance, just go to the website for Baby Not On Board. And the author, Jennifer Shawnee, you look at what she's arguing here. She says, look, having a baby is good. Not having a baby is really good. She suggests that people should celebrate not having children. You wouldn't believe some of the expressions used of children. I mean, some of them I can't even use on the air here. But it's as if, well, what does it mean when women who have children are now referred to as breeders? You know, something is sick within the society that celebrates this, so we're going to be looking at that. But last night I was on CNN's program Anderson Cooper 360 Degrees, and it is very interesting to discuss this on national television. Of course, they're not just a Christian audience, a secular audience. And first of all, the whole situation was set up in order that there could be a discussion between myself and a proponent, the author of the book, The Childless Revolution, and it's worth hearing. I want you to hear just a little bit about what went on last night on Anderson Cooper 360. And first of all, it was set up in such a way that, we know what's going on.
They are a family of two, Jennifer Sean and Alan Rapp, married 5 years and child-free.
So tell me why you got married if you don't want to have kids.
We felt like we were family. We wanted to make that official. Even though, you know, we don't maybe look like the traditional family.
Now, that's Jennifer Shawnee, who is the author of the book Baby Not On Board, which is also a website. You can just go to www.babynotonboard.org, I think it is. And there you'll see all these arguments being made and all the rest. But listen to what she said. She said we, and the we here is herself and her husband now, They've been living together for years, but they've been married 5 years, she says. We felt like we were a family. We wanted to make that official, even though we don't maybe look like the traditional family. Well, what's missing? What's missing are kids, or any intention to have kids. And she's right up front about why. She likes her cats rather than kids. She wants to sleep late, and she and her husband do yoga in the morning. She doesn't want to worry. You know, one of the persons that appeared in this said that she likes tennis, and children would get in the way of her tennis. You know, it's not as if we have here morally serious arguments being made. It's all about choice. And the person that I really debated on this segment, that's what she kept saying over and over and over again. Madeline Kane, the author of the book Childless Revolution, she said this is a choice. Well, let's listen to the first big exchange about this. And what you're going to be hearing is, the part about choosing cats over kids.
Jennifer published this book, Baby Not on Board, Extolling the Virtues of Life as a Non-Breeder. Instead of late-night feedings, Jennifer and her husband go to late-night parties. Instead of spending weekends on the soccer fields and the playgrounds, they sleep late and do yoga. Instead of traveling to grandma's, they travel the world. And instead of kids, they have cats.
This is Ida.
The cost of raising a cat is much less than raising a child.
Some people might hear that and say, that sounds really selfish of them.
You can turn the tables and say, gosh, isn't it selfish that you've had children that you expect to take care of you when you're old? Isn't it selfish that you want a replica of yourself?
No, it's not selfish. That is the way God intended it. It's not selfish to have children and to invest yourself in them and to raise the next generation. Do you realize the insanity of this? If her logic is followed, it is selfish to continue the world. We should just all in this generation say we're not going to have kids anymore because that'd be selfish. So let's just selfishly use up all the resources of the world and die out happy. You know, frankly, it's hard for me to believe that people with a straight face can make this argument. By the way, if you want to make it, the phone number is 877-893-8255. I'd love to hear from you. But there's more going on here. I ended up, as I said, speaking live on the program over against Madeline Kane, who's author of The Childless Revolution. And we've got just a little bit of time in this segment to kind of let you know a little bit about part of what was going on there. Let's roll clip number 5.
Albert, why do you disagree with the child-free lifestyle?
Well, in the first place, I find it incredibly sad. I think most viewers watching that segment that you just very capably put forth that just demonstrates that this is really about avoiding the responsibilities of parenthood. And I find that profoundly sad. You know, obviously there's a tremendous moral point to be made here. These couples, they have to be very thankful that their parents didn't make the same decision. And society depends upon parenthood and the raising of children being seen as a norm for married couples and as something that is a social value. Well, you know, I agree with that. I said it, come to think of it. And I think it's just profoundly true. I even like the way I put it. To be honest, that's it. It should be seen as the norm for married couples and something that is of social value. It's hard to believe that you'd argue otherwise. But some do. As a matter of fact, Madeline Kane did. She says, I'm all wet. Run clip number 7.
Madeline, is he wrong?
I think he's dead wrong. I think that parenting is an option. It's not an obligation. And I think that we should be applauding the people who are mature enough and making a decision saying, I know that this is not the right choice for me.
Okay, well, let's just try to understand what she's saying there. You know, she's saying, I think we ought to applaud people who are mature enough to know that they're too immature to be parents. You know, what's wrong with the old exhortation, grow up? You know, when you look at all the letters I've received, and some of them are too hot to read, let me tell you, and there are people who I guess are out to demonstrate their unfitness for parenthood by the way they write angry emails. And by the way, I had another woman who wrote that I was being verbally abusive because I said that those who do not have children by choice are doing something wrong. Well, that's an interesting new little aspect in our therapeutic culture. To say that someone else has done anything wrong is now verbally abusive. No name calling, no shouting, just let's talk reality here, folks. You know, this is or isn't an appropriate lifestyle. You know, if you just take a secular perspective, let's forget that Christianity has something distinctive to say about this for a moment. Let's just assume that we're pure secularists. As Immanuel Kant suggested, an action can be moral only if everyone did it, it would lead to human good. And if everyone did this, it would lead to the extinction of the human race. I was fascinated also by some folks who said to me, you know, this is just not a part of what we're doing. Our marriage is about us. Well, it's a good thing that the parents of these people didn't say their marriage is just about them, the mother and the father. Well, no, the husband and the wife. They never would become a mother and a father, and they never would be the person who now says it's their choice to live a childless lifestyle. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Do we as Christians have a distinctive take on this? I think we do. Give me a call. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I said we were going to keep one line open for people who disagreed with me. Evidently, we should have kept one open for those who didn't. It's going to be interesting to see where we go from here. I want to know what you have to say. We're going to go to another Al in Louisville, Kentucky, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Al, it's your turn.
Hey, I just disagree with what you're saying as far as married couple that choose not to have children as being selfish, okay? Because I just think, you know, that is a choice that they have made, and it really shouldn't matter one way or another if they have children or not have children, okay? Secondly...
Well, hold on just a minute. I'll let you have your say, Al, but when you say it's okay, a choice, well, it's a choice for some reason. What is a non-selfish reason to make that choice?
Well, I think, you know, like part of what you were saying is that people like that freedom. They like that freedom to be able to come and go when they choose to come and go, go on vacation, go play tennis, go to yoga class if that's what they choose.
And that's not selfish?
And, well, I don't think it's selfish, not when it comes to another human being. I think to have people having children that don't want children is worse than people that choose not to have children that don't have children. Because
yeah, but the whole point is I'm suggesting they're wrong not to want to have children.
Well, why should it be wrong not to have children? I look back at the beginning of time with Adam and Eve. Did Adam and Eve have children in the Garden of Eden? They were completely happy.
Okay, wait a minute, Al. Whoa. What? Wait a minute here. What are Adam and Eve doing in the garden before the fall? I mean, where are you coming up with this?
Well, they weren't having children.
Well,
at least there's nothing mentioned about children in the Bible that they had children in the Garden of Eden. It just said that they romped through the Garden of Eden. They were happy and happy-go-lucky, walking through the garden naked, having a good time for themselves.
All right, Al, I don't know what Bible version you're reading, but it's not found in the Bible. You go immediately from Adam and Eve at the end of chapter 2 being naked in the garden and not ashamed, no mention of them romping around anywhere. To the fall. It's immediate. You go from Genesis 2 to guess what the next number is? 3. And there's the fall. And the command to reproduce is found at the end of Genesis 1, not after the fall. Okay. You've heard from two owls in Louisville. We disagree. That's clear. Let's go to Matt calling from Jeffersonville, Indiana, listening on WFIA. Matt, it's your turn.
Thank you, Dr. Mohler. I heard you questioning there with into Genesis 1, so that answered my first question of where your scriptural basis is. As a fellow Southern Baptist, I think we both agree on the foundation of Scripture. So I'll go into my second question, is that my wife and I have four children. We're pregnant with our fifth. So when is enough, and when do you enter the realm of not being selfish? Is 6 enough, or is 2 enough? And also, how does that help support your opinions on, fertility and sterilization?
Wow. Now, Matt, first of all, God bless you and your wife for having, you know, children and nurturing them and the nurture and admonition of the Lord, you know, receiving them as gifts. I think that's the big thing. I don't think that anyone can say what the perfect number is here. You know, the Roman Catholic position is absolutely no contraception, no birth control under any circumstances. I don't think that's mandatory. And frankly, we've had discussions on this program about the whole question of birth control and contraception. I'm going to argue that that's a different issue in that what we're talking about today are those who choose no children at all. In other words, what they want is marriage. And this goes back to the basic principle of Christian theology that when God gives us a gift, it's not our right to take the gift apart. In other words, when he gives us marriage, marriage comes with children. You know, one of the interesting things here, Matt, is that this conversation could not have taken place at any other time in human history until the development of that little pill. You know, because, the old deal was, throughout most of human history, if you get married and you enjoy the physical relationship of marriage, you get babies. And if you didn't, most people that didn't were brokenhearted because it was some physical problem. But it's the invention of modern pharmaceuticals, and especially the pill, the birth control pill, that has all of a sudden revolutionized this. And now people say, well, now we have a new lifestyle option to get married, not have kids. And I just think that from a Christian perspective, first of all, that is denying God's glory in marriage, which was by his creation to be associated with procreation. That's not something that came up after the fall. That's Genesis 1. You know, when we're talking about here, what I keep hearing over and over again is choice, choice, choice. That's all that Madeline Cain could talk about last night was choice. And we just have to respect each other's choices. Well, that is the absolute end of any moral discussion. If it's just a matter of choice, then everything's a matter of choice. The question is, what's a good choice and what's a poor choice? What's a righteous choice and what's an unrighteous choice? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, the other thing I hear, when I keep hearing people defend this, Well, again, what if everyone did this? What if everyone made this choice? How can your choice be right if it would have been wrong for your parents to have made it? It's a good thing they didn't make this choice, otherwise you wouldn't be here to make that choice. It's our choice to set the record straight and to have a discussion. Give us a call. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. We're talking about chosen childlessness. Obviously, some strong feelings about this. Honest to goodness, folks, sometimes it is hard for me to tell if someone's making a serious argument or not. On something like this, if it's going to be morally serious, it's got to be presented in a way that's coherent, logical, sensical, that we can talk about here. And I guess the one thing that disturbs me more than anything else, how this has all just turned into choice, choice, choice. Choice is a moral equation. There are good choices and bad choices, better choices and worse choices. And a matter of Christian thinking and of Christian discernment is to develop the ability to distinguish between good and bad, better and worse choices. But the choice itself is not a moral principle. I mean, it's all right if you're deciding what color socks to wear, but not when you're deciding whether or not to have children. It can't just be choice. Let's go to Norman calling from Joplin, Missouri. Let's go on XM Satellite Radio. Norman, it's your turn.
Thank you. I was just calling to talk about this. I called in the last time you talked about it and told you that my wife and I, we actually took physical steps to make sure we were childless before we were saved. And it is definitely a sinful thing. And the reasons for it were sinful. You know, we wanted to be able to act and live our lives outside of biblical, truth. And we didn't want children in our way, and that was the reason we did it.
No,
and
Norman,
this whole choice thing, it's always about, sin. People want to be able to sin with no consequences and nothing in their way to do so.
Norman, I want to ask you a question, just in terms of your own experience, not having children and then having them. One of my concerns from just a sociological viewpoint here is that I am fully aware that parenthood helps to make us into more responsible adults. Now, those of you out there who are not parents and you feel like you've just been insulted, let me just tell you, there's just a qualitative difference in life when you do have responsibility for children and when you do not. You do not have the luxury as a parent of deciding, I'm not going to get up this morning, or I'm not going to go to work, or I'm not going to take care of these things, because there are people depending upon you. Also, my children have taught me so much about life. I mean, simply by the experience of being a dad, I've discovered things about myself I never would have known. And they have made me a better person. And Norman, don't you think that that's something that a lot of people are missing, that they don't even know they're missing?
Oh, it absolutely is. And that's one of the things, too, I was going to say is, really and truly, my wife and I look back now and we realize, if we were not capable of being responsible enough to have children, we really were not capable of, being responsible enough to be married. Because
yeah.
Marriage in itself is a very big responsibility. And really and truly, we were living like children, but of course we were grown-ups with no restraints of our own parents around us.
Norman, I really appreciate your call. You know, last night on Anderson Cooper 360 Degrees, one of the points I made is that what we have is a lot of adolescents growing old. It's this perpetual adolescence, and especially when you reduce it. Let me just take you to the website. The woman who was mentioned there, Jennifer Sean, the book, Baby Not On Board. Listen, this is the front page here. Do you think minivans are for losers? Do you secretly believe all babies look like squished worms? Do you actively avoid eating at restaurants offering complimentary crayons? Does the thought of giving birth make you reach for the nearest strong drink? Have you ever wondered why have kids when I could just have fun? And again, she presents this not as a joke, as a morally serious argument. She's written the book. She's appearing. She was interviewed on the CNN segment last night. She goes on to talk about how couples can do this. By the way, she's got her cat, and that's her things here. She'll offer practical tips. I'm reading from her site on making the most of your life in the world. Find appropriate ways to deal with other people's children and even non-reproductive means of passing along your DNA. And by the way, that's a fairly scary part of her website. She has links to all these other organizations, and then she has slang for children among the childless. And let me just tell you, I can't even read a lot of those here. But it speaks of children in the most awful ways. I mean, there is something here that's not just childless, it's just anti-child. Now, I'm sure that's not true for all in equal measure, but there's something here that's just deeply anti-child, and that's deeply troubling. Let's go to Bob calling from Lexington, Kentucky, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Bob, it's your turn.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I agree with you that obviously it's biblically sound and that Christians are commanded and all people are commanded to reproduce and have children. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I do want to pose, you know, the what if, like this lady that wrote this book. Obviously, I don't know what her faith is, but I'm guessing God isn't a central part of her life. For the non-Christians, for the ungodly that probably, like the last gentleman said, had no right to get married to begin with because they're selfish instead of selfless, which probably describes a lot of people, is society better off for those people having children or not having children?
You know, Bob, that is a great question, and I'm going to come back at it at a little angle here. You see, I think the way society ought to look at it in general, and the church in particular, is not that we should go to a married couple in this situation who we don't think are now fit to have children in terms of taking that responsibility. I don't think we should go to them right now and say, go breed. I think we should say to them right now, we need to help you grow up into maturity so that you would both desire and be capable of being a parent. You would desire children and be capable of that. I think what's missing in this society is the fact that we used to have mechanisms for making people grow up and making people assume this kind of responsibility. By the way, let me just give you an anecdote. This morning I was listening to NPR, and Terry Gross had an interview with Carol Burnett. And Carol Burnett is, you know, of course, one of the most famous television entertainers of all time. She's going to be on a Walt Disney special, I believe, on Sunday night, and was being interviewed about that. And I didn't realize until I heard this interview this morning that that she had alcoholic parents who died when she was young, and she was basically raised by a grandmother and all the rest. And she was talking about how she developed her sense of humor. And it was not a discussion about Christ and the gospel. It was just one of those reminders that an awful lot of human beings have grown up and gone on to do great and very admirable things without having all of the best that we would hope for in terms of their home. And, you know, I think, well, for instance, I got an email from someone who said, I wouldn't have a kid unless I could give them everything the world has to offer, and I can't. Well, maybe the most important thing that you have to offer isn't what the world offers at all. You know, it will be life and love and nurture and discipline and teaching and Christ. You know, who cares if you can give everything the world could give? You know, how rich do you have to be to have kids? The vast majority of human beings have been born into poverty and nonetheless have thanked God for the gift of life. And I guarantee you, they've thanked God that their parents didn't make the decision not to have kids. And if that question and decision were universalized, we wouldn't be here to have this conversation. We'll be back. The phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK, coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. I appreciate every single caller and all of you who tried to call and couldn't get on. And obviously, this is an emotionally laden issue, and it's one we're going to be following. When I wrote that article 2 years ago, I didn't expect to launch a tsunami of national debate. But just in the last few weeks, I've talked to the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, and now CNN, Anderson Cooper, 360 Degrees. And, you know, something's going on when this gets the attention of the national media. I didn't expect it. But here's what's getting their attention. It's a demographic reality now. The American birth rate is now down to 14 out of every 1,000 persons. That is so low that it's going to require some historical explanation. And the number of childless married couples is rising so much that it has the attention of the U.S. Census Bureau. Something's going on here. We have time for one final caller. We're going to go to Sarah. Sarah, it's your turn.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I actually totally agree with you and everything that you've had to say. I actually was anti-child and never planned on having kids. However, I did experience an unplanned pregnancy and scheduled an abortion because I didn't want to have kids, and I couldn't go through with it. And now I have a 15-month-old son, and I can tell you it was the best thing that has ever happened to me, and I never knew the joy that you could get out of having children. I just thought that they were nuisances and pains in the butts and everything else.
Sarah, it's worth doing the program to hear your call. I really appreciate that. That is so sweet, and it's courageous of you to call like that and to speak in the first person of how your mind was changed on this. I'm thankful, first of all, that your heart and mind were changed before you were able to go through with that abortion. And I'm sure that 15-month-old son is going to be just as thankful as well as he grows into maturity. And I'm thankful for what God's going to do in your life through this child. And I think that is also really, really important. I think if you take, first of all, my wife out of my life, I really don't even know who I am. Because she's become so much a part of who I am and making me who I am. And then for both of us, I think it's safe to say if you take our children out of our lives, we don't even know who we are anymore. Because over the process of being parents, now we can't separate what it means to be not only husband and wife, but mom and dad. And that's God's gift. I wouldn't be half the man I am, whatever that is, if it were not for what God has done in my life through the institution of marriage and through all that marriage means, including children. And yes, I'm bold enough to say that I think that's central to God's plan. I think you can get it right out of the Bible, starting with Genesis 1, Genesis 2, and follow on through. After all, marriage is the very model that God gives us for the relationship between Christ and His church. Some people are called to celibacy and to singleness. We celebrate them for the glory of God as well, that are thus freed for gospel service to the glory of Christ. But for the most of us, it means marriage, and we better get the most out of marriage to God's glory. We'll be back next week. I'm Albert Mueller.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.